Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, March 3rd. I'm Maya Williams. First up, residents of even-numbered LA City districts will be electing council members tonight. Also on the ballot are two charter amendments that seek to boost LA's persistent low voter turnout. If passed, the amendments will move both school and city district elections to even years by the year 2020, overlapping them with state and national elections. LA City Council would decide whether or not to combine the ballots. Some criticized the proposed shift, saying district elections will be viewed as less important on an overcrowded ballot. Another concern is if voters even care about the amendments. Here's USC law expert Jessica Levinson.
Is that the type of thing that gets people to the polls? Like, should we legalize marijuana? Should we, you know, name another kind of hot button social issue? No, it's not. It's an election reform issue that does not tend to capture the public's imagination in the way that I would hope, for instance.
Last district election had just over a 20% turnout of registered voters. This has been an issue for over three decades, as LA has seen a steady decline in voting since 1969. Those who do vote usually participate in every election, like Angela Kahn.
This wasn't a particularly controversial election, but you still have to vote.
With tonight's voter turnout expected to be low, it will fall on these consistent voters to decide if we will see a combined ballot for all levels of government in 2020. There's another issue that may affect voter turnout, particularly in downtown LA. Caitlin Plummer reports.
Some precinct polling stations in District 14 have been moved to new locations, and residents are arriving to vote at stations that do not have their names. Unless the voters have the time and means to travel to their new polling stations, residents have the option of voting provisionally. Though the city says postcards were sent to each voter in the affected precincts, many LA residents were not notified of this change. Marty Colbert, who has voted at the same location since 2011, was sent to two other locations before deciding to vote provisionally.
I don't like it because I'm pretty sure that my vote's not going to count, because it's going to take somebody with a lot of dedication to make sure that my vote gets into the right place at the right time.
Provisional votes require further processing to confirm the vote is valid, but Ginny Pack, the chief of the Los Angeles Election Division, assures that all provisional votes will be counted.
Provisionally just means that it just takes further processing. We'll bring it back here. We check every provisional ballot to make sure that they are eligible to vote, you know, in this election. And if everything checks out, we do count them.
The election results will be released tonight. Caitlin Plummer, Annenberg Radio News.
Following the shooting death of a homeless man in Skid Row on Sunday, activists had their chance to speak at LA's Board of Police Commissioners meeting. Charlie McGovern reports.
About 200 people met at the corner of San Pedro and 6th Streets this morning to protest against the killing of a Skid Row man on Sunday by the LAPD. Charlie Satterman Robinett, who was better known in the Skid Row community as Africa, was shot and killed by police following an incident that led to a physical confrontation. Bystander video of the conflict went viral on social media and was a major reason why so many gathered in protest today.
I'm out here today because a man died with 5 gunshots in his back. And his only crime was not having a place to stay.
That's Vicky, a Skid Row resident who sleeps in a women's shelter at night. She declined to give her last name. Many of the protesters attended the weekly meeting of police commissioners, where the controversy surrounding the shooting was at the top of the agenda. Steve Soboroff, president of the Board of Los Angeles Police Commissioners, asked that the public wait for the incident to be properly completed.
I and my colleagues are precluded from making judgments in this prematurely until the matter is presented to us with all of the evidence.
More than 30 people came to the stand when the floor was open to public comment.
How many more people must die a senseless death?
Charlie McGovern, Annenberg Radio News.
The engineer of the train that crashed and derailed in Oxnard last week died this morning from injuries caused in the accident. Andrew Tweedy has the story.
Glenn Steele was one of 28 people hospitalized after the crash, but he is the only one who has died from the accident. He was pronounced dead at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in L.A. just before 4 a.m. Steele was 62 years old and was ranked number 1 on the Metrolink seniority list with 42 years of experience. Ventura County officials said this morning Steele risked his life by laying on the brakes as long as possible instead of running to the back of the train to save himself. Steele is survived by his wife, three children, and a grandchild. Andrew Tweedy, Annenberg, Radio News.
Federal authorities raided several locations in Orange County suspected of being involved in birth tourism schemes where pregnant Chinese women travel to the U.S. to give birth so that their children can be U.S. citizens. Even though birth tourism itself isn't necessarily illegal, authorities believe these operations helped Chinese women immigrate illegally through visa fraud. USC law professor Niels Frenzen explained authorities are after the people behind the scheme, not the women and children themselves.
What is accomplished by arresting 100 women and 100 babies and let the people who are running this operation go scot-free?
No one was arrested Tuesday, but Homeland Security and IRS officials seized possible evidence and interviewed mothers for potential criminal charges against the scheme operators. A spike in the number of thefts around campus has left many USC students without smartphones or ideas of where those phones may be. Kevin McAllister has this report.
During the last 2 weeks, the Department of Public Safety has sent out multiple emails with details about these thefts, which have taken place both at night and in broad daylight. DPS Deputy Chief David Carlisle says the best way for students to avoid these thefts is to use their common sense and put away their cell phones while walking alone or walking late at night.
A couple of things. Lock it, hide it, keep it. And two, don't walk alone off campus late at night by yourself and show people what you have.
USC sophomore Max Hill believes that the solution to the recent thefts might simply be more programs to help students understand the dangers of living in a large city like Los Angeles.
The main thing would just be, you know, maybe sending out an email or talking to incoming freshmen at their orientation.
Soon, though, the number of phone thefts should decrease. A bill passed through the California Senate this past August states that all smartphones will need to have a kill switch, an option that allows a user to remotely wipe their phone and render it useless if it is, in fact, stolen. That bill takes effect this coming July. Kevin McAllister, Annenberg Radio News.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke before Congress this morning in a highly anticipated address regarding nuclear negotiations with Iran. But as Lauren Day reports, many lawmakers chose to skip out on the talk.
President Obama did not attend the speech, but he said he read the transcript where Netanyahu urged Congress to hold off on negotiations. The evident tension between the two global leaders runs deeper than the congressional absence. The controversy was sparked when Netanyahu was invited by Republican congressional leaders after he was previously denied audience for the same issue. Obama prefers a diplomatic approach to keep Iran in check, whereas Netanyahu is seeking strict sanctions for Iranian nuclear weapons. This would greatly alter U.S. foreign policy. Obama sees Netanyahu and supporting Republican efforts as undermining current U.S. efforts to negotiate a nuclear deal with Iran. I'm Lauren Day for Annenberg Radio News.
California Department of Water Resources conducted their third snowpack survey today. The results mirror the state's two previous findings that show levels are far below normal. Officials measured only 7 inches of snow in the Sierras, which translates to only 1 inch of water. However, most of that water will sink back into the ground, meaning we'll get almost no useful runoff. The state is at 19% of normal snowpack, and without a significant amount of storm activity, California is in for another year of severe drought. Research done at the USC Leonard Davis School of Gerontology has uncovered a new hormone that fights weight gain caused by foods high in fat. The hormone called MOTC mimics the effects of exercising by normalizing the body's metabolism as well as fighting age-related conditions that cause weight gain like diabetes. Scientists tested the hormone on mice that were fed a high-fat diet, but the mice didn't gain weight the way they normally would. USC School of Gerontology Assistant Professor David Lee called the findings a completely new biology and assured that the hormone would work on humans. But Lee stressed that this is not an excuse to live an unhealthy lifestyle.
By no means, we don't want to encourage people to sit in their couch and take a pill and hope everything goes well.
Lee said the next step is to start testing the new hormone on human subjects. If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Taylor Haney with today's Root Source.
Here's a riddle. What has wings, a dragon head, claws, and a forked tongue, and gives political parties disproportionate advantages? Gerrymandering. Let me explain. If you don't know, gerrymandering is when a political party sets electoral boundaries to its advantage. The word first came up in Boston in 1812. Governor Elbridge Gerry cut up Massachusetts districts to help the Democratic Republicans, and one of the new districts looked like a salamander. So Elbridge Gerry plus salamander made gerrymander. A political cartoonist rendered Governor Gerry's map as a bulbous, fanged salamander with wings. The image of the dragon-like creature caught fire, and soon the whole country was using the word. So, tread carefully when you're voting today. You might awaken something wicked.
Political activist and revolutionary Angela Davis emerged in the 1970s as a global communist icon. Recently, she proved she still has the power to spark debate, now as much as ever. She spoke at USC last week, and a lot's been said in the days following her visit. Campus was abuzz with equally heated reactions. Some were inspired and felt called to action.
Angela Davis is one of my role models, and as an activist and a writer, I just look up to her in so many ways. This served as inspiration and validation that, like, we're on the right track.
Others, well, not so much.
She is not the type of role model that, you know, as Republicans, as Americans, and as an African American, I would want to see, you know, espousing those beliefs.
That was from ATVN's interview with Jelani Smith, a representative from USC's College Republicans. Opinions differ on Angela Davis, but what did she actually say during her visit to draw such polarizing reactions? She encouraged students to question authority.
Speak back. We always have to speak back to power. This is a very important historical conjuncture. And let me say that we can never predict when change is going to come. No one could have predicted that the Montgomery bus boycott was going to unleash a movement.
Davis has always been a fierce supporter of communist economics. Throughout her life as an activist, she's openly spoken out against global capitalism. Her talk on campus was no exception.
There can be no definitive triumph over racism unless we also challenge capitalism. That we have to draw connections with campaigns against sexism and homophobia and transphobia and against those who would put limitations on people with different abilities.
Before her visit, the USC College Republicans posted an image on Facebook that was later taken down. The image featured Davis with text superimposed over her face that read, "Shame on the groups responsible for bringing murderer, communist Angela Davis to campus tonight." It's important to note here that while Davis was charged with murder in 1970 in the deaths of four people, she was later found not guilty and absolved of all charges. During her two-year imprisonment and following her release, Angela Davis became a global figure in the civil rights movement. Racial and gender equality and prison reform have been her major social platforms. But her staunch support for communism has caused much controversy. Still, many students felt inspired and energized by Davis's revolutionary ideals.
I consider myself a revolutionary in a sense. It's definitely different than the 60s, but it's still informative in terms of how we can make a difference. You know, so how can we use our art forms to be able to create something that's different, but it's the same effect in terms of the movement that we want to create?
Campus media outlets and student groups have engaged in a constant back and forth since Davis's visit. But the overall impression is that freedom of speech and expression, regardless of dissenting opinions, should be upheld, especially in a university setting where differing minds converge. Tune in to ATVN at 6 p.m. for L.A. City Council election results between former County Supervisor Gloria Molina and incumbent Jose Huizar. That that's it for this Tuesday. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Maya Williams.